Welcome to the Invest with Clarity podcast, where you will learn how success in investing, as in life, is the result of absolute clarity. Mark Pearson of Nepsis in Minneapolis, Minnesota, shares his passion for portfolio management and commitment to transparency and communication to allow investors to fully understand what they own and why, bringing them to clarity in their investments. And now, here are your co-hosts, Matt Halloran and Mark Pearson.
Hello and welcome to another Invest with Clarity podcast with Mark Pearson. Today, we are going to talk about insanity and the level of insanity of stuff that's out there, because what we're going to look at this survey is truly insane. So Mark, help us, one, frame the insanity, and two, tell us a little bit about where this insanity even came from.
Right. So first of all, I've been super excited to do this podcast. My head is spinning right now with so many thoughts and so many things, because people will ask me, what do you contribute to, or what do you believe contributes to the level of success that you've had in your company? And I say, first and foremost, probably my passion. My belief system, what I believe in, what I am providing to people, and the level of passion I have. So I have been super jacked to do this podcast today, Matt. So it is insanity. And before I give you the insanity part, what's that phrase that, I think it was Ben Franklin, maybe, the definition of insanity is doing the
same thing.
That's Einstein.
The definition of insanity is to do the same thing over and over again and expect a different result.
Yes. Yes. That's exactly what our investor world is about. Now, the AAII is the American Association for Individual Investors. Love the organization. I'm a member. I read a lot of their content. I think they've got often very good content. I don't necessarily always believe in it. Or I shouldn't say believe in it, but agree with it. But I do think that they provide a great value to many people. And they do a survey every week. And by the way, the website, if people want to know, is AAII.com, AAII.com. Last week, the survey question was, what is the primary factor you use when choosing a mutual fund or exchange traded fund? There was a sizable amount of people that voted here. It was probably close to 1,000 people responded to this. So it was a pretty big pool, right? So here are the options, Matt. Historical performance compared to an index, fees and expenses, mutual fund rating service like a Morningstar or Lipper. And the last option, of course, I do not invest in mutual funds.
Mark, it seems to me like they were totally setting you up for this podcast. We've talked about every one of those things at least once.
So. Yes, we have. I may get a little bit fiery today, Matt. So bear with me.
I like fiery.
First of all, 24% said historical performance. 24% said performance compared to an index. 21% said fees and expenses. 18% said mutual fund rating service. And 13% said I do not invest in mutual funds. Now, before I shred this into oblivion, I want to bring up Dalbar. We have talked about Dalbar in the past, right?
Yep.
And what is Dalbar? Well, Dalbar is an independent research organization that does quantitative analysis on investor behavior and how investors' portfolios perform relative to quote unquote the markets, which drives me nuts, right? You've heard me say this 1,000 times, whether you listen to me on the radio or you listen to the podcast, Matt. You don't invest in a market. You invest in businesses, either stocks or bonds. You're investing in companies, not the market. The market is nothing more than the greatest tool ever created to bring buyers and sellers of businesses together. So when someone says to me, I'm invested in the stock market, I say, really? How did you buy their stock? And they look at you kind of funny, like, what do you mean? I'm saying, well, how did you invest in the stock market? Well, you know, I own mutual funds and exchange. Oh, so you own businesses. You mean you buy and sell your businesses using the stock market? And they give you the weird look like, yeah, I guess that it is what I'm doing. I mean, the stock market, man, is no different than a flea market, than a vegetable market, right? It is a market where buyers and sellers of businesses come together. So investors have this idea that they invest in the stock market. Now, to go back to Dalbar independent research shows that consistently many investors underperform, quote unquote, the markets because they attempt to time it. They buy at market highs. They sell at market lows. By the way, I just talked to an advisor today, just a little squirrel for you. I talked to an advisor today who we manage money for, and they have another firm that they that manages money for them as well. And clients put money in at the end of the year to be invested, and they're still sitting in cash today in July. Oopsie daisy. The S&P 500 today, as I'm reading this to you right now, is up 19.5%, Matt. You want to talk about costly mistakes in investing? Now, let me give the basic premise for our listeners that we at Nepsis believe in investing in great businesses over time. We also believe that volatility is the greatest tool ever created to allow investors to take advantage of investing in great businesses on sale. And in October, November, December, Nepsis was hauling in buying in companies, and including buying in January, February, and March, to the point where client portfolios are up substantially this year, far higher than indexes, but we're not going to talk about numbers, okay? Because you don't invest because of historical performance. Oh, wait, sorry. Shoot. That's the number one 24%er, man. Sorry about that. Shoot. Darn it.
Oh, my gosh. What? Okay. I'm sorry. How can some that is baffling to me, because that is the antithesis of what disclosure and disclaimer every advisor has to say or should say when they're talking about historical performance.
Every mutual fund and ETF will have in their prospectus to say, yep, quote, past performance does not guarantee future performance. Investments contain risk. And yet people will go to the historical performance. Now, I'm gonna go down to the rating service and encourage people to go to investwithclarity.com. I've got to make sure we've got this up there. I think we do. We have a white paper called The Falling Star. And if people want a copy of it, go to the website, fill in the box there that you want information, send it to us, and we will email to them the white paper, The Falling Star white paper, which talks about basically that if you are looking at Morningstar's rating services and you are buying 4 or 5-star rated funds, you're killing yourself. Because statistically speaking, and I don't remember the stats, we did a podcast. You can also listen to the previous podcast on this. The statistical percentage of funds that continue on a 4 or 5-star rated rating in the subsequent years, 1, 3, 5, 10 years, the numbers are staggeringly low. So not only do people look at historical performance and look at rating services, they both now have given themselves a, frankly, a statistical, not an opinion, and a statistical disadvantage. Because if you look at the Dalbar study, it tells you investors continually underperform because they move their money out of the market, quote unquote, markets. They put their money into markets, quote unquote, when everything is super high and they feel good. Investing, rule number one, you should never feel good when you're putting your money to work. It should feel painful. If it feels painful, you're probably going to be in good shape, right? Because nobody wants to invest when things are bad, right? Now, I'm not saying that should be your criteria for investing, full disclosure, right? Yeah, but my point is that you want to look at your plan, your process, your strategy, if you will, of how you are making the decisions to put your money to work. Historical performance has no guarantees. Now, here's the second thing we always talk about, Matt, when we talk about historical performance. How can you make a decision to invest in something that you don't even know what you're investing in, because you're investing in a mutual fund or ETF that owns stocks or bonds, right? But you don't know what stocks are owned. You don't know what percentage of the portfolio is owned in those stocks. Therefore, you technically really don't know the risks you are taking when you invest in a mutual fund or ETF, because you do not know what's owned in that fund. And you can say, well, I can go look at these services. They tell you what stocks that are owned in there. Yes, for the previous quarter. You can't usually get that on an up-to-date basis. So you're looking already at historical information. The past does not guarantee the future, right? And so what you are seeing is a continual movement in the industry to put investors at a disadvantage. I want to circle back. We're finishing up our quarterly report for the end of June. I always put a quote in at the top of our quarterly newsletter. And our quote this quarter, Matt, was, "A climate of fear is your friend when investing." Remember I said, if you feel really bad and nervous about doing it, it's probably okay. Mm-hmm. A euphoric world is your enemy. Let me say it again. A climate of fear is your friend when investing. A euphoric world is your enemy. Warren Buffett. Because people don't know what they own and why they own it, what other options do they have? Because people listening to this are going to say, well, if I don't know what I own and why I own it, if I can't see what I own, what metrics do I have then to make the decision for investing in the mutual funds or ETFs? And my response is very simple, that you don't. You invest in businesses. You go to Nepsis, you go to investwithclarity.com, and you invest in businesses and literally can look at your portfolio on a minute-by-minute basis to see what's happening with the companies you own, with the buys and sells happening with your businesses. In other words, a statistical, major statistical advantage. I think I talked about on the last podcast, the white paper we're working on, Gary Kaminsky, and mm-hmm. the study they did that investors, if they knew what they own and why they owned it, they wouldn't have sold during the financial crisis, right? Because the reality is, Shelby Davis said this of Davis Funds, you make the most money in bear markets, you just don't realize it at the time. You see, everyone's doing comparisons, Matt, but the fact of the matter is you don't make a nickel until you sell something. You don't lose a nickel until you sell something. So 24% are looking at historical performance, while disclosures all over the place say past performance isn't indicative of future performance. So then we go down to performance compared to an index. Why not? Comparison, the thief of all joy. Another white paper that we have here at Nepsis that you can go to investwithclarity.com, ask for the thief of all comparisons, the thief of all joy white paper. Someone from our team will email that to you. You can look at that white paper.
And Mark, with this 24% looking at or making decisions based off of an index, we've probably done 4 or 5 podcasts. And I know you've done this on your radio show many times, talking about a lot of things that sway the indexes are 1 or 2 major holdings, right? Or major stocks. Talk a little bit more about that, please.
Okay. So there's several points that I think are extremely important. Number one, the reality is that most investors don't have a clue in how the index is created and how the index works. So why don't I just put my life savings into something I don't understand? That makes a lot of sense, right? The S&P 500 is what's called a market cap weighted index. There is a committee at S&P that gets together and they determine what value is given based on the market cap of a company. So in other words, the largest market cap companies have the greatest impact on the S&P 500. Amazon, Google, Microsoft, Netflix, Apple. These 5 names have been major, major contributors to the performance of the S&P 500, while all other 490 or 495 companies have done much less. So the reality is, Matt, that investors don't understand how the S&P 500 index works. Now, what's worse is the Dow Jones Industrial Average. The Dow Jones Industrial Average is a price weighted index. So Intel, which is in the Dow, is a $50 stock. Visa, by the way, the number one performing as of last week anyway, the number one performing stock in the Dow this year is $179, $180 stock. Boeing, $350. these stocks, price weighted, have the most impact on the index. The NASDAQ, I remember one time I was driving down the road, they were talking about the NASDAQ. This is several years ago. And the S&P and Dow were down on the day, but the NASDAQ was up 1%. And all of it was because Apple was up big. Apple can move the index. That's the reality. Now, I'm just saying, common sense, does that make sense? Now, people, Matt, will say, well, but if I invest in the index, I at least know the companies I own. Yeah, you do. But number one, does that give you the greatest flexibility? Number two, do you know what companies have what impact on the index? And number three, if you know the companies, why wouldn't you just invest in those great companies and not dilute yourself to 500 companies? Because statistically speaking, studies have shown a portfolio of 20 to 40 companies is an aptly diversified portfolio. Now, let me make the third point, last point here. That is that no one should have 100% of their equity position in just the United States. No financial advisor should recommend that. And the reason for that is that when a financial advisor sits down with a client and they assess their needs, their goals, historically speaking, appropriate asset allocation states that if you're a long-term investor, which is not 1 year, 2 years, or 3 years, if you're a long-term investor, you should own U.S., international, and emerging market stocks, not just U.S. So if you're going to compare a fund, and look, people do this to us all the time. They compare our portfolios to the S&P 500. And I've written it a million times. I've said it a million times. I put it in writing a million times. You can't compare a Nepsis portfolio to the S&P 500 because we are a global portfolio. We invest in small, mid, and large cap companies, not just companies like the S&P 500. So in other words, the comparison component of looking at indexes, there again, Matt, I would argue you have put yourself at a disadvantage. So hopefully that answers or gives you a little more meat on the bone for you.
It does, lots more meat. So let's talk about the other meaty levels of insanity on these other statistics.
Yeah, fees and expenses. I'm going to tell you a true story, true actual story. I get this new client. Client has $2 or $3 million. I don't remember the number. This is several years ago. Okay. And they had a sizable position in a company called Valeant, which is a big pharmaceutical name. They were well known for rolling up other companies into their company, buying companies' stock and integrating them into their company. And her money was with a mutual fund that had invested in Valeant for years. And the stock had done extremely well. Now, off the top of my head, I can't remember the exact percentage of her portfolio that was in Valeant, but I believe it was like 18 to 20%. And the stock was moving up. And one of the things you should know, Matt, here at Nepsis is that when a new client comes in, we just don't sell everything and then put it into our companies. We sell the companies in their portfolio when we think it's time to sell them, because we need to raise cash to buy the companies we want them to own in our portfolio, right? But when her money came in, and I've documented, I don't have in front of me, but basically the stock was at like $100. And I started selling it. I started strategically cost averaging out of the position. Fundamentals hadn't changed. Nothing was going on. But in a very short period of time, literally this stock went parabolic and it went from like $115 a share to $240, peaked at $240. At $221 or $222, I sold her remaining piece in that stock. And that stock eventually ended up going all the way down to like $6 or $7 a share. Now, the question I would ask, and by the way, while I was doing that, right, while I was going through that process and I was strategically doing this for the client, I'm going in and I'm buying the businesses that we want her to own over time, right? That Valeant stock saved her, I don't know the exact number, but let's just say if you had a stock that went to 240 and it's now at $6 or $7, you probably are in a position where you've saved a lot of money, right?
Yeah.
Now, my question to you would be, can you put a price on that for fees and expenses for me? Probably not.
I can't.
See, I believe we've talked about this on other podcasts. The reason why there's a race to the bottom in fees, Matt, is very simple. People don't know what they own. They don't know why they own it. They can't put a financial correlation to the value they receive by a financial advisor putting them in a cookie cutter portfolio. And so the mentality of the investor is to reduce it to the ridiculous. Reduce it to its simplest denominator. Past performance, compare it to an index, fees and expenses. Those are the three top things that, because what else can the investor look at? They can't really see what you own up to date, right? They don't know, they really don't know how the fund or ETF makes their investment decisions. What's their buy discipline? What's their sell discipline? They have no control over tax management if it's a non-IRA. I'll give you another example of fees and expenses. I have a client, I've had him for years, calls my office and says, I need to liquidate my brokerage account, $600,000 brokerage account. And I said, I'm buying a house. And we haven't sold our house yet, but to get a deal, we pay cash for this other house. We're going to get a better deal on the house. And I can liquidate my account, buy the house, sell my house, and then put the money back in and invest it again. And I said, well, yeah, but you've got some significant gains in this portfolio over the years that you've had this invested. Why would you want to sell it all, especially if you're going to go back and you're going to reinvest the money? I said, how about we do this? How about we do a collateralized loan against your assets, right? And that way your money stays invested. When you sell your other house, you pay off the loan and it'll be in the next few months and you don't have to pay any capital gains on those stocks. He goes, we can do that? I said, of course. Do you think he cares about what his fees and expenses are for his portfolio management?
Mark, I honestly believe that if people looked at the real true value of the advice in situations like that, I don't think people would be arguing at all. But so many other financial services professionals just want everything to be so easy and so cookie cutter that they can put anybody in anything at any time, right, that they're really not doing valuable work. So therefore, there is a race to the bottom.
Right. And that's a great point, because the deal is on that advisors are not money managers. Now, there's always the guy in the group who thinks he's a money manager, but he's not. I've had this conversation with multiple advisors. They tell me, I manage money. Oh, really? What's your largest holding? It used to always be American Funds, Growth Fund of America. And I said, that's funny. And I said, no, what's your largest holding? What do you mean? That is my largest holding. And my response to them is, okay, well, if you're a money manager, Mr. Money Manager, you would answer the question with the largest stock position, not the largest mutual fund position, because a mutual fund is a bucket of stocks that another manager is managing on your behalf. Well, we do all this analysis and we look at this factor and that factor and we make the decisions on what funds to own. Great. Maybe they're working hard on it and maybe they're good at it even, Matt, right? But it does not dilute or delete, I should say, the fact that investors can't quantify that. They can't quantify it because it's just cookie cutter, putting in, it's making it easy. And if you're a financial advisor, Matt, right? And you've heard this because you used to be an advisor. You get to 40 million roughly, that's the first barrier of growth when you have 40 million under management. Advisor has to make some adjustments, maybe hire some more people, do some things, because at 40 million, the amount of clients you have becomes more difficult. You get to 100 million, they say that's the ceiling when you're an independent advisor. If you're at 100 million and you're managing all your clients and you're taking care of doing all the trade and everything else for the clients where advisors are, you can't do it anymore. You can't grow anymore, right? So the reality is that most financial advisors, in order to manage that 40 to 100 million, are going to have to find ways to make it quicker and easier to manage money, because frankly, trading takes a lot of time. Whether even if you're in mutual funds, it takes a lot of time. And so if financial advisors are forced into a position that they have to make things easier, cookie cutter, that's why there's a race to the bottom on fees and expenses. People can't quantify.
How are we going to wrap up today's podcast?
I don't know. I got so much more I can talk about. I'm in so much fire. I can't even, I need to read to you real quick this article. So there's at the Dalbar website, they had a link to this article. This was from April 20th of 2019 in the Seattle Times. Okay. And the title of the article was "The Signal for Avoiding Markets' Next Painful Downturn Comes from Within." Okay. And I'm going to read a couple snippets of this, and I'm going to opine, then we can close it down. It says, Carl's a 75-year-old retiree from Mercer Island, splitting time between charity efforts, yard work, family, and trying to make sure his money will last for the rest of his life. That's the biggest thing people are worried about, right? It's utilization of capital. Is my money going to, are my investments doing the best they can? And am I on track to have the kind of financial future I want to have? Those are the two basic questions we always ask. In September of 18, Carl's portfolio 100% invested in the index, and specialty exchange traded funds, was up more than 15% on the year. By the middle of December, he was in the red and, quote, just could not afford to lose money anymore. So liquidated nearly his entire portfolio. This is the mentality of the investor, Matt. This is my passion for changing the investment world one investor at a time. Quote, just could not afford to lose anymore. And my response to that would be, what made you think you were losing something? Because if you don't sell it, you haven't lost it. And that means that, like many investors, his emotions, and by the way, financial advisors are like that. Like the guy I told you about still sitting in cash from December. Financial advisors can be just as bad and emotional. I don't get emotional when I invest because I have a process. Trust the process. The process is a time-tested, long-time process of investing in great businesses over time. So as a result, he finished 2018, Matt, with a loss of about 10%. Get this. By mid-January, Carl was convinced that the bull market was back on, so he invested again just in time to catch the end of the rally. The end of the rally. In mid-January, the rally was almost over, apparently. I don't know what the percentage of the S&P is up from January to when they said, you know, that he the end of the rally, but I got to be blunt with you. The rally hasn't stopped. Now there was a little bit of a pullback in May, but the rally hasn't stopped, frankly, since March of 2009. I hate to tell people, right? But this is what the mentality of the investor is. So real quick, man, as a result, Carl didn't endure the very worst of the buy high, sell low cycle that investors experienced in the last 6 months. Now, to skip ahead, basically, at the end of the year, according to Dalbar, the Standard & Poor's 500 index was off 4.38%, but the average investor had lost more than twice that amount, taking a 9.42% haircut. As I'm talking to you right now, there's over $19 trillion still sitting in cash right now, Matt, and the S&P 500 is up 20%. I'm telling you that people sell out of emotion because they don't know what they own and they don't know why they own it, period. And they are short-term thinkers and they think emotionally as opposed to sticking to a process. Frankly, when you read articles like this and they talk about quote-unquote investing in the market, no, you don't invest in the market. You invest in businesses. So look, I could go on for hours about this. But at the end of the day, successful investing is about knowing what you own and why you own it, investing in great businesses over time in an appropriately asset allocated portfolio. And that is based on your investment goals and objectives and your tolerance for volatility. And then
now, Mark, if somebody wants to either an individual investor or an advisor wants to utilize their services, what's the best way for them to reach out to you?
They can go to www.investwithclarity.com. Click on the link, talk to an advisor. We'd be happy to help.
Mark, thank you so much for dispelling this insane survey today.
thank you. And thanks for having me.
If you have not subscribed to the podcast, make sure you do that. Also, if you know somebody who really, truly needs to hear this, make sure you share it. It's super easy by clicking the share button below. And if you have any questions for Mark or their team, make sure you go to investwithclarity.com and click on their contact us page. They will be more than happy to reach out. So for everybody in Nepsis with Invest with Clarity, this is Matt Halloran, and we'll see you on the other side of the mic very soon.
The content discussed is for informational purposes only. It is not a solicitation or recommendation for any securities that may be mentioned herein. Advisory services offered through Nepsis, Inc., an SEC-registered investment advisor.